Welcome to Beyond Cast Jervis. I'm Christian Corley and this is James McLean. And you've just heard someone playing two tunes from Star Wars using a pencil on a piece of paper. You can view them in the show notes and get a proper look at them. They're on YouTube. I found them on Twitter recently, just the other day. And what do you think? They're great, aren't they? It's how did someone discover that? It's crazy.
I can see how someone discovered it. I mean, how many times have you sort of, I don't know, I mean, have you done it somewhere, you've got a glass or something and you're just sort of tapping it or, and you start to feel rhythms and sounds. I mean, obviously nothing as complex and as thought out as that, but I can almost see how that could, you could start doing it, but I've never tried it, so I couldn't imagine how difficult it is to...
Yeah, I think it's about catching the rhythm in what you're writing, isn't it, the sounds?
Yes.
Of the letters. I mean, my. I suppose everyone's probably got a bit of a Star Wars related talent. I might be stretching things slightly here. I don't know.
Go on.
I mean, I can do a Chewbacca. I can go. I can do that. It's better if you're just about the yawn. It sounds a bit better. But I can also do this as well. Just a mug and me going. You see, anyone can do that.
Yeah. My talent is derisively snorting at people who show off pop cultural stupidity on the air.
On the air.
Yeah, on the air.
On the
digital air to the one person.
Hello, listener. We're talking about The Last Jedi, the brand new Star Wars movie, which isn't brand new anymore because it's a month old now. But good Lord, it doesn't feel... 4 to 3 weeks, anyway, I suppose. It doesn't seem that long since I went to the cinema to watch it with my little boy, Bruce, in December, just before Christmas. Because, you know, December's just this massive rush, isn't it? We haven't spoken for weeks, have we?
No, that's true.
Because, you know, everything that happens in December and the various attempts that you had to make a podcast. I think we may have spoken briefly then, but... You know,
barely.
We haven't spoken. Yeah, barely. Especially, is it working? Yeah. Okay, I'll go now. Come back. Oh, it's not worked. But that's the last podcast that you and Gareth Cavanagh did on Twice Upon a Time. And anyone wants to find out what we thought about that, then go ahead and listen to that. We are talking non.2 topics today. It is The Last Jedi. It's got a strange sort of cultural life to it, The Last Jedi, because it seems to have been the film where people go into the cinema expecting Luke Skywalker's back, yay. They leave the cinema thinking, wow, that was awesome, and then 6 hours later, they're not thinking, wow, that was awesome anymore, and they're thinking it's an absolute crime against the Star Wars canon. I'm not saying that's everyone's feeling, but that, you know, if you go on the internet, you have these two big parties saying, yes, it's wonderful, or no, it needs deleting from history.
But of course, you also got to bear in mind that parties who are content with what they have are going to be less vocal about mentioning anything because, you know, if you have a good piece of pie, but it's good, it's not, you know, and you enjoy it, you have no need to rush to the shop and have a shout at the person who served it to you. So the loud voices inherently on any topic will be the more negative ones. So you won't always hear the positive ones because if you're negative and you need to get it off your chest, that's the sort of people who will talk. And I still think, I think there's a load of issues around this film, not actually within the actual film itself, but within the cultural thing that is Star Wars, which people are simplifying. I think we simplify everything, don't we? But I think it can be very easy to say that, you know, if you didn't get this film, you're an idiot. If you love this film, you're not a Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. This film isn't doing very well because it's crap. This film, you know, all these sort of things. I think things are far more complex than that. And I think there's also a thing about Star Wars being like a pop, probably being the sort of biggest pop cultural energy entity that we've ever seen, period. I mean, it's now goes back, 40 years, and it's a global thing. It's a sort of, I don't think there's been anything like it before in the way it touches so many different forms of media and obviously so many different age groups, because you've got at least two generations of Star Wars fans as kids, you know, people like us who saw it when we were kids, the original ones, and you've got another set who saw it as kids as the prequels. So you've got so many things going on there, and I think this film is getting to a point where you're starting to see those tensions start to come up. and come to the surface. You know, our, you know, it, we came from, I mean, it's a bit like Doctor Who in that sense, I guess. You know, we come from a Luke Skywalker, you know, universe. A lot of people come from the prequel universe and have different expectations of what Star Wars should be. You perhaps even got younger people who come from the Rebels or Clone Wars background.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you might even find that those people, you know, above, under the age of 18 are less engaged with Star Wars. So by a third film of Star Wars, they are less interested in it. You know, we have this assumption that just because we're really into Star Wars, and maybe even people 10 years younger than us are into Star Wars, that the next generation will be massively into Star Wars, and so it'll just keep riding high forever. It might not be the case. So there's loads of things going on here, and I think when we all talk about that, we've got to be aware that it's no real simple answer to this. I've had a few people talking to me about this. My old games producer, he's very much on the other side to me on this, and we've had long talks on it too. So it's, yeah, it feels like it's been a longer time since the film in terms of discourse, because it just seems to be constantly, you know, on Twitter for like years. It feels like on Twitter and Facebook it's been talked about for Screen Rant, just doesn't seem to let it go. They found the clickbait gem of the century. Every day is a new thing about Luke Skywalker. It seems that time of the amount of time that's been of discourse of it seems longer than the time that's been since the film was aired.
So there are plenty of talking points, and I think what we're probably going to do is do a sort of a general chat on this, and then we're going to release some smaller chats about The Last Jedi, depending on how things go on the main chat. When I left the cinema,
yeah,
and you may feel the same about this. I don't know, because this is the first time we've spoken about it.
Yes, it is. Yeah. First time we've talked about it.
I left the cinema largely satisfied. I thought it was a great film. Later on, I was thinking there's a few weak points to it, and I was kind of seeing what other people were saying on Twitter and reading some Screen Rant articles and some YouTube videos. But I think overall, what I think this is a glowing cinematic spectacle that has a few rough edges to it that could have been tightened in places. If you're paying... And it's a lot more than it used to be, and obviously it depends where you're going. But if you're saying it roughly, if you're paying £10 for 2.5 hours entertainment, it's very unlikely you're going to come out of the cinema with a film that you think is perfect and still think it's perfect 3 weeks later. It is an art form, yes, and Star Wars does have this long history, and there are several things that this film needed to do to improve upon some of the weaknesses of The Force Awakens, and I think it does that. You are never going to get a 100% perfect movie. And I know I'm sort of wheeling back a bit from like the importance of movies and everything. I think this is a great film. It has bits that aren't great. The whole casino thing and all of that could have been a lot tighter in the chase with the animals on top. It does kind of detract from what's going on. But then again, at the other side of that portion of the movie, you got the nonsense with Poe being a bit of a prick, which has upset a lot of people for the opposite reason. Well, yeah, and I think it is good, but I think just that whole segment of the movie needs to be tighter. And I think there's other ways that they could have illustrated Poe's recklessness.
But this is what I think is going to be interesting with the film. And it'll be, and we can't say it'll go this way because the way we talk is now so different to how it was 40 years ago. Mm. But if you think of Star Wars, you think of Empire Strikes Back, how different in pace the Dagobah systems, Dagobah bits were.
Yeah.
And to the point where as a kid, I used to like fast-forwarding over them because I was bored.
Yeah.
You know, that is considered, and I still consider it an absolutely fantastic movie. And I think there's a lot of things which are fired at this film, which are as reflected in the other films. You know,
but isn't that what we were calling Force Awakens out for doing, though?
Well, in the sense that, I think there's things that this film does which people think is bad, but the other films do as well. I mean, like, the people say, well, you know, the comedy in this didn't work. And you think, well, comedy has always been pretty subjective in all Star Wars films.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a perfect art form. You know, people will say, oh, well, there's, you know, the Force does weird things in this film. And you think, well, you know, the Force has never been a consistently thinged thing in all the other films either.
No.
You know, there's things which people attack for this film, which you could say, well, you could sort of say in a lot of Star Wars films.
I saw someone losing their shit over Luke throwing his lightsaber away.
Mm-hmm. I saw that as well. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I also loved it for two reasons. I think one, well, loads of reasons. One, because I think it was, you know, it was a nice switch from what people would expect.
Mm-hmm.
I think two, it was interesting because it showed how utilitarian these sort of devices are for. You know, especially, to be honest, if you're going to talk about Jedi, and, you know, Jediism is sort of very closely equated to Buddhism in a lot of ways, a lot of shared values. You know, possessions are not important to a Jedi. You know, so an old lightsaber should not carry massive significance. Now, in fairness, you'd say, well, that's not Luke. Luke does tend to have connections to the past, as this film explores with the hologram of Leia. You know, he's not totally detached from everything. But, you know, it didn't. But I think it shows how, and I think this is one of the quintessential problems with audiences for this film, is that to them, that lightsaber is sacrosanct. It has meaning. It ties them back to The Empire Strikes Back. It ties them back to Revenge of the Sith. It ties them back to Star Wars. You know, it has real significance. So to see the lead character just chuck it over his shoulder, you know, I think to them, that is quite hurtful, because to them, that lightsaber means more than it does to the character. And so I think you get some of that sort of thing is what people bring to the movie. Almost like what you bring to the cave is, you know, and what you take into the cave on Dagobah is what, you know, you affects how you see the movie. And so if you have expectations of what this movie should be, I think that is a lot of the problems where we've seen a massive backlash is that people have got to a point now where Star Wars is not so much the exciting brand new thing that was, say, 5 years ago. It's now something where they've had two films worth of it, and this is the third. And they're no longer willing to sort of go, okay, fine, I'll let this go, you know, because I'm overwhelmed by the excitement and the aura and the spectacle of this. I'm now at a point where, you know, I know now what I want to see, and I'm not getting it. I think there's a bit of that going on here as well.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's, I mean, to me, I mean, it does, in a way, it makes, like, the end sequence of The Force Awakens a bit of a setup, going back to the tossing the lightsaber away.
Yeah.
Well, you know, on the other hand, it's perfect timing. It just works as a funny moment. And yeah. I think you've got to have... You'd be pretty po-faced not to laugh at that, wouldn't you? Everyone in the cinema I was in laughed.
Yeah. I think as well, people have also got to accept that cinema changes. And you can't accept that the tone of Star Wars has to remain utterly identical. And I would challenge you to say that Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi have the same tone. Or the Phantom Menace and Revenge of the Sith. You know, they're not a Rogue One.
Well, Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back is a very serious film compared to Star Wars.
Absolutely. And people actually had issues with Empire Strikes Back at the time, unsurprisingly. You know, if you go back to the reception of it at the time, it wasn't all totally perfect because it broke expectations of what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, with this film, and I've said this quite a lot, I think it was a fantastic film. I would... As Star Wars go, and I, to be honest, I don't actually rate many Star Wars films as being fantastically good, bar Empire, Star Wars, potentially Rogue One, although I'd probably never watch Rogue One again. It doesn't really bring me back, but it was a very well-crafted film, and this would be the other one. I think the rest are all okay. I watched Force Awakens again this Christmas, and I must admit I was a little more friendly to it. There were still lots of mistakes I think it made in replications of previous films, but... Solo seemed more enjoyable in this one. Solo, there's still the issue with Solo in that one. And I was saying to a friend the other day, you know, I think the issue with Solo and the mistake that The Force Awakens makes, which this film doesn't, is that it sets Solo up as a father and his death, his sacrifice, is as a father. But for audiences, they've had 5 minutes of seeing him as a father. So what would have otherwise been a very powerful death if that had been, you know, if we'd had another movie of him and Kylo Ren or Ben Solo working together, and then to have had this, that moment where he's killed, that would have been like mind-blowing. You know, that would have been a real, you know, big moment where, you know, there's a change in that relationship. But given we saw him as a father for 5 minutes, with no flashbacks either, that death didn't work. Well, the Luke Skywalker thing in this, to me, really did work because it played on what we know of Luke Skywalker. His ending is a reflection of his beginning, and that's why it's very powerful. I would recommend to people, if you can cope with his SoCal way of expressing himself, which I know some people can't, Kevin Smith does a very good vlog on Force Awakens, which is about an hour and a half long. Last Jedi, which is about an hour and a half long. And Mark Kermode does a good one, I think, as well.
Okay.
But I thought this was brilliant. I mean, you don't need them. I mean, we're fine. And
indeed we are.
I mean, Kevin Smith, I think, I don't agree with all he said. But I don't think there was much wrong in this movie. I mean, there's a couple of comedy beats which, as you say, didn't work for me, but that's comedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Putting slots into the droid and in the banking, the Mark Hamill voiced little thing,
yes,
using
BB-8
as a casino thing. That didn't really work for me, and nor did the use of that later with the firing of the vast amounts of coins. The joke didn't get me.
I think the younger ones liked it, though.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. It's different strokes for different size folks. But for me, that didn't work. There was nothing in that film, given the amount of attacks it's had, that I think it did wrong. The only thing I could say it did wrong is, yes, what you said there, I could agree. Maybe the the casino planet could have been a little tighter. I think it was needed, though, because, I mean, the danger with Star Wars is you don't get to see the world they're fighting for. You get to see battlefronts.
Yeah.
Or fringe places. You don't get to see much of... you didn't get to see any of Coruscant or any of the civilized worlds in the original trilogy, which is crazy in a sense, because that's what they're fighting for. So I think you needed that. But, yeah, maybe it could have been a little tighter there. I get that. But ultimately, I think it was a good film. There was nothing that I thought was wrong with the characters. I loved the Poe thing. I think the Poe thing was the most daring thing in the film. You've got a character who pretty much destroys the rebellion through the whole film, which is, you know, a really subversive thing to do in Star Wars. But yeah, it fits Star Wars because Star Wars is a dark universe.
Hmm.
You know, worlds get blown up. You know, this is, you know, people, you know, families are in massive, you know, massive tragedies. You know, this is a really dark film. And you get a character who, his constant choices in this film, which would usually be the ones that you would follow as being the heroic, brash, you know, hothead choices, are the ones which ultimately undo everything to the point where they lose the fleet because he went against the chain of command and sent Finn off on an escapade which had them bring the wrong sort of person back, who then gives the Empire all the information of where their fleet's going to do, and they all get wiped out, and it's all Poe's fault. And I think that is incredibly dark and a fascinating thing to do without making the character have to be dark or evil or have to sort of redeem himself, you know, in those usual story structures. You've done a bad thing, you've got to redeem yourself often with your life. You know, people in war make bad mistakes. And I thought that was a really subversive, clever, dark thing to do in this film, which you'd never see in The Force Awakens, never see in a prequel. So I think, I think there's some things to celebrate in this film. What other things didn't you like, Christian? Because you've...
Oh, what I didn't like? Oh, right, I was going to suggest I did like.
Okay, let's form for a second.
Okay, what did I like? I like General Hux. I like the way he completely loses his shit. You know, you've already got Kylo Ren wandering around having tantrums.
Mm.
And they've obviously got this rivalry. And then you've got General Hux just losing his temper, either because something's gone wrong or because he's that passionate about being an absolute psycho general leader of the First Order. So I do like Donald Gleeson as General Hux. I think that opening battle, when we were introduced to Rose's sister...
Yes.
That was really good, and there's some excellent moments in there, and it felt like Rogue One, actually.
It did, didn't it? Yes, that's very true. Mm.
So I liked that, and I think Rogue One has probably had an effect on Star Wars, way beyond people on YouTube stitching it together with the beginning of Episode 4.
Well, yeah, because Rogue One is very much a war movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
And to some degree, while Star Wars is very much about, you know, the 1930s Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers serials, it is, the actual aesthetic is very much based around World War II.
Yeah.
You know, fighter pilots, battleships. And so we're now seeing an extension of that. And so we're getting this sort of, you know, bombers, subs sort of feeling, and that fits. And it does give it a bit more sort of a grit to it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I mean, one of the things I will say that people have criticised in this bit, they said, you know, it's ridiculous Poe taking on an entire massive Star Destroyer. And you say, well, first of all, you had no issue when Han Solo turn the Millennium Falcon, which is not a fighter, against all the artillery guns on a Star Destroyer and charged it. That's fine.
Yep.
It's fine also. I mean, it wasn't fine. I know some people complained about it, but there wasn't this amount of complaints when Poe did exactly the same thing with a TIE fighter in Force Awakens. And in this one, I think the whole point was is that he gets so close to the Star Destroyer that they let him get so close that he, you know, the problem is, and this is, goes back to battleships in World Wars, is that, you know, guns are ranged. You can't, as soon as they get too close, guns, those sort of guns become useless. They're there to sort of take out flak and distance targets. You use your, you need your fighters to maintain, coverage over your, you know, when things get that close. And they hadn't scrambled them. And I think that was what it was trying to do. So I think, again, people saying that's a plot hole, and it's not. You know, so why didn't Hux do anything? Well, I think, one, I think it happened so fast, which is something maybe you could argue needed to be tightened maybe in the scene to make that clear. Or you could even argue simply that Hux didn't want, you know, Hux had his plan. And I get the impression with Hux, he's very rigid. Yeah. Once he has his mindset, that's what he's doing. I think that's why he's meant to be a fairly failed general, is that he's that sort of person. He locks in. His mindset was right. They're going to lose, and we're going to follow them through hyperspace and destroy them. And so, like someone playing a video game who's got their sort of mindset on what they're going to do, and they're ignoring the thing happening to the left, and then the thing happening to the left causes massive devastation, and you're like, bloody hell, I didn't think that was going to happen. And I think that's the sort of situation you're in. But yeah, I thought that was great. That was great. Anything else? What about the ending with Luke on the salt planet? Because some people loved that, and some people hated that. Kevin Smith had some very interesting thoughts on that, which I thought was...
I like as you mentioned how it calls back to his origins,
mm-hmm.
with the two sons in that moment, looking out at them. I think I'm because I'm a bit torn about this because there are good reasons why he shouldn't be dead, but there's also good reasons why he should be dead. Within the fabric of the Star Wars universe. So I am torn on it. I think it was excellently done, and it was really nice and poetic, and from what had just happened prior to that, and the whole presumably becoming a Force ghost and being at one with the Force. At the same time, I think, and this isn't necessarily about Carrie Fisher, but, you know, there was this original story that there was going to be, so, like, each of the three were going to be, like, the classic Star Wars focus in the three new movies, and clearly that's not going to happen now. Mm. But at the same time, and we'll probably talk about this later or separately, I don't buy the Snoke thing. And because I don't buy the Snoke thing, I think I'm therefore forcing myself, maybe not forcing myself, but sort of like by default also not buying the Luke thing.
Is this the same thing that, because I think Gareth talked about this when off air when I was chatting to him, that right. he believed that Snoke's death was the same as Luke's projection, that Snoke was never actually there in the...
Yes.
And therefore he can reappear. Which I thought was interesting. I hope they don't, because I think, again, it subverted expectations to have this emperor, this emperor-like character taken out and given, and then that space being...
I would agree with that, but at the same time, Kylo Ren doesn't display anything... he doesn't appear to be as powerful as Darth Vader, let alone as powerful as Snoke or the Emperor. So, you know, all he's done really to display his power has been to try and extract information from Rey and frozen a blaster bolt at the beginning of The Force Awakens.
I suppose the argument would be that it was more about the sort of hubris of Snoke, that he didn't see it coming.
What I'm saying is, don't we need a big... I know it goes back to like subverting expectations and everything, and it has been done over and over again throughout all the Star Wars stories, the whole Master Apprentice thing. But whether there's an apprentice or not, there needs to be a very powerful Sith/Dark Jedi. And Kylo Ren doesn't say to me, I'm a powerful, ultra-powerful Sith/Dark Jedi. He appears to be, at best, slightly better than Rey, mainly because he's been shot by Chewie at the end of The Force Awakens, and they seem to be on par when they're dealing with Snoke's guards.
Well, there's a lot of arguments that have been going around suggesting that because the Force requires balance, that the Force almost to some degree naturally finds... No, not naturally, sort of artificially creates balance, that... that Rey's powers become faster because Snoke to balance out with her counterpart, which would be right. Kylo.
Mm.
Not sure I totally feel that. I like Daisy Ridley's explanation, which is pretty much which was just like, deal with it. Rey is just seriously badass with the Force, and it's like, okay, I'll go with that. If that is the idea, that's the idea. But yeah, there was an interesting meme I saw, and it's very rare to say that, but it was made me really think about The Force Awakens, and that extends to this as well. And it was sort of saying that you've got to look at, if you look at Star Wars as a cultural reflection, so we're talking about how it reflects our culture as it is now, so, rather than what was going on 30, 40 years ago, you can look at, and it's this, you can look at it vaguely politically within sort of discourses around the world at the moment, where you've got, and it's sort of saying that we have these talks about neo-Nazism, and we're obviously not just talking about America, this is all in Europe and everywhere else, it's not, you know, a localized thing. But neo-Nazism, is a lot of it is about sort of looking back at history, seeing an event, and then judging it and saying, I approve of that. So neo-Nazism is looking back and sort of, and maybe cherry-picking, or maybe looking at the whole thing and say, the Nazism movement in the 1930s, 1940s, there's elements of that which we feel are right. And in a sense, in the movie, that's sort of kind of where the New Order is. The New Order is First Order is sort of saying this. It's sort of saying we have looked back at the Empire and we want to replicate that. So it's sort of saying that they're sort of, and again, you see this with Kylo Ren, is that he's not Darth Vader. He is someone who admires Darth Vader and wants to be Darth Vader.
Mm.
So he is sort of almost like a neo Darth Vader himself. And in that sense, he's not as big and as iconic as Darth Vader, because he's a replication thereof, while Darth Vader wasn't. He was a sort of an original. And then there's a sort of argument that these people are worse, because while you could sort of say the Empire was doing something on its own, it was creating a history without trying to replicate any other history per se. It was finding a very brutal way to deal with you know university society problems in their universe. The First Order is actually trying to replicate, having been able to judge the effects of that and thinking that they're good. And I think that's kind of interesting, because then it actually gives you a different approach on looking at Kylo Ren, and it gives you a different approach of seeing what the First Order are about, because it's not just like, oh, Abrams is just copying the Empire. It's like, well, actually, given what we see, you know, with resurgences of neo-movements in this world, and I'm sure you could say neoliberalism and neo, you know, of all sort of political spectrums, it kind of works with where we are at the moment.
Yeah, in many ways, I suppose it does, yeah. I think, I always get, I just hope Bernard Sumner's not listening every time you misname the First Order.
The New Order, yeah, sorry, yeah, fair enough.
I do think you need to be, I'm not speaking about you, I just mean in general conversation, I do think we need to be careful about maybe not trivialising but simplifying the neo-Nazism. And I think there is a great degree of what you said is accurate. I always get uncomfortable when conversations go in this direction, because I think a lot of, there's a lot more to it than that. And I think if we simplify it, if we're not appreciating what it is,
As a general thing, yes. There's lots of things that feed into it. So you can't say it's just about people who've looked back and gone, oh my God, that history is cool. We want that. But what I'm trying to say is that if you've got people who identify with a previous historical group,
and we
can talk about iconography as well, regardless of what is actually forming their and fueling their position, they are, if they're looking back and they're sort of saying that is something that I want, that I feel represents where we are now, or we feel that can somehow represent us, there is that sort of judging that historical position, and then in a sense feeling that they are in some degrees replicating or having to replicate it, or it mirrors, and that's sort of what I'm trying to say. I totally agree with you. I'm not trying to bring this into a political argument, which is why I'm trying to say this is, you know, about neo stuff that works around the world rather than anything particular that's been in the news recently, because I just don't think we need to go there. But I thought that was an interesting point, because the meme wasn't trying to be political. It was just trying to sort of say that, trying to draw parallels between, well, yeah, we'll say Nazi and neo-Nazism, but I think it was interesting to think of that as being the neo-empire. And what does that say about them? Because, yeah, or, and again, like you say, maybe you could also argue, what does it say about their universe? But we don't really see enough of it to really know. And that was what we used to say was the problem with The Force Awakens, is that we didn't really understand what was generating this First Order.
Yeah, well, we still don't. Yeah.
That is probably one of the failings of Star Wars, is that it tries to be both light fantasy, but it is quite brutal as well. But we don't really get to see, and I think with the new films especially, why the First Order rises. What is going on in the universe to make people feel discontent or depowered to a point where they need change? And
well,
they
I think
decide
it's probably
it's a brutal change.
That could be a reflection as well. It's that if people don't feel represented by their representatives, then maybe they drift towards making decisions that their representatives aren't keen on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you go back to the 30s and 40s after the Great Depression and issues of Versailles, and you look at the German people, and again, this is a horrendously complex cultural issue, but, the, you know, there's a lot of disenfranchisement, people looking for clean, I say clean, but specific direct resolutions to solve problems, and then being given them by different parties. And, you know, is that what happens with the First Order? I mean, you don't really get to feel what the First Order is about. And I think that is one of the failings of both these movies, is that you don't have any foundations to what they are. And I suppose people could argue that that's a bit of the same with the Star Wars movies, maybe, until you get the prequels.
Yeah, I think there is this aspect of it, but at the same time, you do get more information in the crawl, I suppose, about the Empire than you do really about the First Order. The First Order just comes along as an Empire clone, doesn't it? We were talking, before you do that, I'll have to say this before I forget. We always find that people are, because you have this like neo-Nazism, okay, as if there was like this great civilization or great fighting force. I mean, what calls people back to that? No one ever wanders round dressed as a centurion claiming to be a neo-Roman, do they?
No.
Just throwing that out there.
It's funny what is picked and why it's picked. But I think one of the issues, I mean, the problem with The Force Awakens is they did have scenes that they deleted, which would have probably helped strengthen this question, because there were scenes that were shot with a Leia on those planets, which we see being destroyed, that talks a little about the political issues of their universe, which were removed, I think, out of fear of, you know, the prequels and their massive criticisms of being too political and dull and whatever. And I think those would have helped set up this universe, reinvention of the universe far better. But so I think there's some interesting things there to do with the First Order, and I think it made it interesting with Kylo Ren. I thought it was interesting, and Kevin Smith pointed this out, which I thought was good, is that you can very clearly see Rian Johnson visually knocking back so much of J.J. Abrams' material. You know, like in the first few minutes, that base is destroyed. You have Kylo Ren destroying his merchandisable helmet totally and utterly, as if it's like, we're not going there anymore. We're not having this pseudo Darth Vader. He's going to be his own thing. And we're not going to have to keep associating him with Darth Vader. We'll see him for who he is. So you get that. And then, as you say, with the lightsaber with Luke Skywalker, you know, you get this moment tossed out the window. There's lots of things going on in there, which is almost sort of saying, you know, we are moving on from here in a different direction, quite vocally. I think that's quite interesting too. But what's about Luke? Because, I mean, this is the big bone of contention for fans, isn't it? Is the Luke Skywalker, is people saying or feeling that this isn't Luke Skywalker, and also using some of Mark Hamill's comments to validate this as well.
There's a clip I saw of Hamill after he'd come out of the movie. And it looked like he was either sat in the movie smoking dope, or the movie he saw wasn't the movie that he read. He looked shell-shocked, basically. Maybe his eyes are taking a while to adjust to the light outside the movie. Maybe, I don't know. He does seem utterly stunned by what he's seen. And he's less than... He doesn't seem to be himself. He's not able to sort of express himself correctly. If you've seen Mark Hamill in an interview, he's very erudite chap. So,
very much so.
It is a strange moment. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I liked it. I thought I could see why it was done. One of Kevin Smith's issues was that he felt if he had been directing the film and he was saying that he would not have done a fantastic job like he felt Rian Johnson had done, but he was saying one of his qualms would be that he'd have had Luke on the Salt Planet. He'd have brought Luke into the fray. But I kind of see why he didn't, because I think whether fans like it or not, and maybe to a degree because Mark has such a strong association with Luke, maybe whether he likes or not, Luke was always going to have to be a sort of vaguely secondary character to this, that he was there to complement it rather than drive it. And I think the reason he wasn't on the Salt Planet more than anything was because if he'd been there to take on the First Order, it had kind of taken away from the plight of the vulnerable characters and their importance to the story, that it's suddenly being solved by this great hero who comes in and vanquishes everything for the new children.
Yeah.
It's too much what the fans want, but it wouldn't have served the new characters.
Yeah, so I think I like it.
Yeah, so did I, and that's why I liked it, because it had him there, it gave him presence, it gave him meaning, it gave him that farewell to all the main characters and that face-off with Kylo without having him actually take over the story or feel that he had solved the story for them. And I thought that was a very clever way of doing it. I thought Luke was fine throughout. Yeah. I did not think he was cowardly. People have said he was a coward, he ran away. I think, again, it's a bit like with David Tennant and Doctor Who, with his Doctor. You've got to really put yourself in the position of the character and just take away from these ideas of cowardly or emo or whatever. You know, Luke is a character who, you know, he'd had a legacy of his family legacy was not very good. His father had blown up entire planets. That's billions of people had died in his legacy. And here he was trying to start a new one and then was getting visions of that legacy happening again. And you can kind of see why someone would sort of go, I can't do this. I can't let my legacy and the heritage do this again and just take it all and run off as far as he could to sort of just divorce that whole, trying to break that cycle. And I think that was an incredibly Luke thing to do. It was very sort of self-sacrificial. It wasn't about, he felt he'd failed in the same way that Obi-Wan Kenobi felt that he'd failed Anakin. You know, you had that.
This is a character who has self-doubt from the beginning of the first movie.
Well, yes.
He's been knocked back countless times to join did they call it an academy?
Yeah, they do call it an academy, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, his uncle won't let him go away. He's, like, stranded on a planet. All his friends have left. So, yeah, it's perfectly in character.
Well, people say it's like...
What wouldn't be in character is him, turning up like King Arthur.
Yeah, which is what people wanted, because there seems to be this legacy of Luke, which is that he was a brave, which he was, full of hope, full of goodness, saw the best in people, and then this film subverts it. And I've seen that articulated very well by people. But I would argue that Luke was always like on the Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. The tension is will he follow the way of his father?
Yeah.
Is he too flawed to become a Jedi? Is he too filled with frustration, anger, fear that he would not be able to follow the path? These are quintessential to Luke Skywalker, which I see reflected in this film. Yes, he's never been this perfect character. I mean, he force chokes a Gamorrean guard, which I think is very un-Jedi-like. He, in the cave in the second film with Dagobah, he fails the cave. He's impetuous. He takes his weapons in with him and he attacks his mirror version of himself. And then, of course, you have him virtually hacking his father's to pieces at the end of Return of the Jedi until he has that moment where he stops and rethinks, which is kind of what was meant to have happened with the Ben Solo thing, where you have that moment. And I think you can get that. If you suddenly see in your vision this person you're training is going to cause mass genocide, it's that whole thing of, do you kill Adolf Hitler if he was a child, you know, if you could time travel back? It's that whole question that, you know... And I think he has that moment of thinking that, but ultimately he is Luke Skywalker. He doesn't. So I don't get where people find that he's not like Luke, or even where Mark feels he's not like Luke. I think he's very much like Luke. And the things that he does in this film are reflected within the universe. I mean, people say, well, you know, him suppressing his force powers, that was in the Knights of the Republic, the Jedi Knights of the Republic, whatever it's called, the second PC game.
Right.
Remember the main character, he detaches himself from the Force in that.
Okay, I haven't played KOTOR 2. Haven't you played KOTOR? Yes. Spoiler! Damn.
I thought you had. You always recommended them to me, so I thought you had.
I've only played the first one.
But that is one of the themes in that. There's in Rebels, there is the whole force projection thing. Yoda force projects himself into the Jedi Temple, where the protagonist is working through the thing. So that sort of thing is reflected in those films. There's nothing inherently in here which isn't Star Wars-y, really.
And I think there is a problem with the expanded universes, the old one or the new one, that picking bits out is going... It depends... General public going to the cinema doesn't give a damn.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Fans going to the cinema who aren't au fait with parts of the canon because they're a cartoon or because they're a book and they don't like reading or because they're a video game and they don't like video games, then complaining that there's something new in there that is new to them and therefore shouldn't be there. You know, it's fandom all over, isn't it?
But that's fine. But when you have websites writing journalistic articles and doing their clickbait 10 things wrong with the Last Jedi, and these things constantly flag up, you think, well, I'm not sure that is good journalism, really.
No. I don't think not sure comes into it. It's clearly not.
Yeah, but this is what's happening, and I'm seeing it, and I'm not naming these sites, but it's pretty much all of the standard ones have put in these very vague rubbish articles on what's wrong with The Last Jedi, and you can look through them and you go, well, that can be explained. One sort of said, well, you know, if he wanted to escape from the Force, why did he go to a planet which was full of the Force then? And I think, well, wasn't that the whole, couldn't you argue that with Yoda? Yoda wanted to escape being found and, you know, by Force people, and he went to Dagobah, which had a massive dark Force tree next to him. Mm. And maybe that masks
maybe
them,
that's
you know?
Why.
So,
exactly,
you know, again,
yeah.
These are very sort of simple but very clickbaity, and maybe you could argue sort of fueling the fire to enjoy the clickbaiting return of people who want to get angry about these things or feel, you know, argue about it. And I think that annoys me because I think a lot of these articles could be better written and they could sort of stabilize communities a bit.
Well, they could be better written because a lot of things, and I speak this as a former editor of a site that did lots of rants, a lot of things appear to be rants. Now,
Yes. The
difference is, I feel able to state this because I wasn't paid for writing rants. A lot of these people are being paid for writing rants.
And there's a difference as well between doing commentary or editorial pieces and actually doing pieces which are meant to be like reflections, not critical reflections, but sort of, you know, 10 things wrong with The Last Jedi. You're not thinking, oh, this is 10 things that one person who doesn't like it thinks is wrong. You're thinking this is a list of reasonably well-sourced reasons that I can then decide myself, and it's not.
Mm-hmm. No,
I mean, there was one list which was so ridiculous. It was like, well, why was the milk green in that creature? What was that all about? And it's like, well, that's one of the things on your list. That's that damages the film. And that was a legitimate one that was on the list. And it's a lot of this thing again. It's because it's such a big cultural thing, because it creates such fissures within communities. Because I think people come with their own expectations of what Star Wars is, that a lot of the sites then exploit it and start.
I've never mentioned this before. My mum has some beakers.
What, like the blue milk beakers?
Yeah.
Well, they were. A lot of that stuff was just taken off sort of Camden Market in London, wasn't
it? Yeah. Well,
the cantina
my mum's
stuff.
Got big ones and little ones, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought, and again, as we go back to this film, is that it doesn't follow Empire Strikes Back. And when I went to see it, and I actually went to see it by myself, which was, not done that in a long time, which is kind of weird. It didn't replicate Empire Strikes Back as the trailer almost suggested it would, and I thought that was a relief. You know, as we said, The Force Awakens was pretty much almost a replication in so many ways. This was almost like a slight replication of Empire and Return of the Jedi, with things that subvert it. So you have the Jedi Emperor scene, but that is subverted. The only thing, I should say this before we go any further, because it sounds like I'm fawning, the one thing I found did not work in that film, which I enjoyed but causes me massive problems, is General Holdo's resolution.
Vice Admiral.
Resolution to the hyperspacing the ship into the fleet.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said about this whole section with Vice Admiral Holdo, because she does come across as high-handed. And there's obviously a reason for that in the narrative, but yeah. I don't think it does her any favours.
No, that's true. But I think that is meant to be the subversion, is that you're not meant to like her, and then you realise it's not a point of liking someone, it's a point of realising. And I've seen this on lists as well, and people arguing it as well. I think I've seen this in people arguing, perhaps not on the list, was the whole, well, why didn't she tell him? Because then if she had told him, it would have all been sorted. And it's like, it's a military system, it's a chain of command.
It's a chain of command, and he's been recently demoted.
Well, he didn't need to know. But people have really fought this point, that, well, she screwed it up because she didn't tell him what she was going to do, and therefore he wouldn't have done it, so he's not to blame. No. And that is a really weird argument. But, yeah, her issue...
Is that, before you go on there, is that a problem with the storytelling? Is that a problem with the world-building where Poe's relevance and position within the Resistance isn't correctly communicated?
I don't think it is, because I think, in a sense, it's playing off the looseness of these sort of worlds where... And we can go back to Star Wars with this. I mean, you think that where Leia is in the Rebels to where Han is. I know Han's still technically a general, but the way they talk to each other, there's no issue of hierarchy there. Mm. You never feel any, and you get obviously the same in Rogue One, where it's sort of mentioned, but obviously ignored. You get it in Star Trek as well, to be fair. Hierarchies in films like this are ignored. And when you ignore them, you do well. When Captain Kirk goes against the Starfleet and takes the Enterprise in Star Trek 3, you know, we all roar with... you know, pleasure when he sabotages the other ship and escapes. You know, almost in a sense, it could have been quite good to have them sort of flee with the Enterprise in Star Trek 3, being chased. They sabotage the other ship. Scotty goes to warp speed. The cell falls off. Air starts to pull out this old ship which can't cope anymore, which is why it was decommissioned. And they can't get any help because they've sabotaged the naval vessel which was nearby, and they all die in this hulking Enterprise. You know, that's the sort of thing, you know, you never see that reversal of, well, there's reasons why the Enterprise was decommissioned in Star Trek 3. You know, but we always go with, you know, the underdog subverting the bureaucracy and the order of the establishment, and yet here we see the opposite, and I think that was kind of clever. Well, yeah, we still see those tropes that she is the officious bureaucrat. We don't see the benefit in her as a leader. We just know how heroic and good Poe is, because he is a good guy, but we see what happens when you actually disobey and ignore, and why these militaries have chain of command. So I kind of think that was kind of good, that we did get that sort of fuzziness, and then it's just saying, well, yeah, but there's a reason for this. So I liked it, but the only thing I didn't like, what I did like but I didn't like, was the hyperdrive maneuver, because while it was awesome to see, it resolved her arc really nicely, and it was a great, you know, action moment. I just keep saying to people, put me in the Star Wars universe, I would take on the Empire and the Rebels, and I'd wipe them all out. Because I would just have these large lumps of rock, of metal, with a droid in the front and a large hyperdrive on the back, and I would just be plowing them into planets and into other ships, and it just seems like an utterly unstoppable maneuver. And, you know, it seems like no one has ever thought of doing this before.
Yeah, it needs something to ground it within the science of the universe, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like maybe, you know, some sort of hardware lock that prevents it from happening.
Precisely.
Or something to do with the mass of the ship. Or just something.
That was my only issue with the film, because it's a plot hole I find really hard to fill. Anything else there, I can say, yeah, as you've said, Christian, I agree. There are sort of areas where you think, okay, I can get past that. I can get past Hux not helping out the big superstar destroyer. I can justify it, even though the film should have pretty much done that for me, maybe. But this is one I can't. I can't find a way around, because as you say, there would surely be safeguards against this. Otherwise, you know, why did she have to stay? They could have just left droids on there and had that. If anyone, including you, Christian, can come up with a good reason, then I'd be really, really happy, because it would make watching that film easier for me.
Yeah.
Maybe the attack. They didn't even succeed in the attack on the. I don't know. I can't think of a good reason why that worked.
Yeah, other than visually. And audio as well, how they cut the audio, because that was good.
Brilliant, but it's still a manoeuvre which doesn't make any sense to me, that it could be allowed. And that, to me, is as you say, for audiences watching it, they won't think about that. They'll enjoy the moment. It's a great moment. So for the casual audience, it's absolutely fine. But I find as a person just watching it and getting into this world, it sort of gives me questions I can't answer. And to be honest, Force Awakens did it as well. So I can't believe no one has tried to hyperdrive out of a hangar before, or hyperdrive towards a planet. Okay, you could argue with that. People haven't died, and Han is just a great pilot. But you are getting to a point where you're starting to say, Yeah, that was my only real issue with the film I can think of, is that moment. Great moment, okay. But just, yeah, I just can't. It causes a lot of ramifications that I can't get my head around.
Okay, well, we're going to do some more shorter chats about this, which we'll probably record at a later date. Just various talking points about the movie. But, you know, as a kind of sort of getting towards doing some sort of summary wrap-up.
Yeah.
This is the second movie of a new trilogy. You were unhappy after The Force Awakens, I recall, and yes. you weren't sure where the trilogy was going. Where do you feel it's going now?
Well, there is a part of me, a bit like watching the second Blade Runner, where I kind of feel like, in a sense, I wouldn't need a third movie. I've seen people legitimately say, I've had enough of Star Wars now, I think it's done. But I think you could almost argue that this could make a good last movie. There's a new rebellion, a new world, the fight goes on, but the story of Skywalker is over. You know, if Kylo Ren had died in this movie, then you could have almost pretty much finished the franchise there. But I think the thing is, Abrams is back in control. So we might find the next movie starts with Kylo Ren with a hammer sort of banging out the divots and divots in his helmet and sort of refitting that on. And, it could just go back on track from The Force Awakens for all we know.
Yeah.
But I assume where it's going to go is going to really forefront the Kylo Ren Rey thing. And that is going to sort of, as they said, resolve the trilogy. I think you're right. I think having Carrie Fisher pass away, as insensitive as it sounds, will probably cause a little ripple in how they envisioned these trilogies to go, where the third film would have all been a lot more about Leia. Thankfully, this one had a lot of Leia in it anyway.
It did have a lot of Leia in it as well. That was one of the things as well. I mean, we'll skate over the Leia Force thing.
Yeah.
Laura Dern's character is kind of a perfect replacement, isn't she?
Not anymore,
exactly,
But it would have been interesting to have seen that character, as we see her revealed in the film. In a sense, it's a shame they did kill her off, because she would have been interesting to see her, because there'd have been a bit of complexity there to have seen her as this cold, harsh Vice Admiral, and yet at the same time see her as a person as well. So it's perhaps a shame we've lost her. And as you said, as you're intimating, because we lost Carrie early, she would have been quite a good follow-on to take
exactly,
that role.
Yeah.
And we've lost Admiral Akbar as well, which was a understated shock.
Yes.
I still think it's a trap line should have been immediately before he died. That would have seemed with a quick cut to a close-up of his face as he says it before he's blown out the window.
Yeah, I'd go with that. They should have done. This whole thing of having the three leads return, well, there wasn't really three leads, was there? There was four leads in terms of how the credits appear. There's four rebellion leads in the original Star Wars movies, one reason given is because Harrison Ford didn't know if he was going to, or they didn't know if Harrison Ford was going to do the third one, so they brought in Billy Dee Williams.
Yes. Which was, I think fans would like to see Billy Dee Williams come back. I think you're right. I think there's a problem. It's not a problem, but I think if you're looking for a constant theme going through these three movies, it feels like you need another.
Yeah.
Key old character to reappear,
unless it's Ewan McGregor.
Well, yeah, people have said that they'd like to see Ewan appear, and there wouldn't be any harm in doing that, because I do think we will see Luke again in the next film. I think we'll see him, but I think they will do the Force Ghost thing. But I think as long as Hamill agrees to it, I think he will reappear. I think Lando would be a good one, because I think Lando is one of those characters which actually people are fairly interesting, because he never got horrendously developed. He was in, you know, one and a bit of the films, almost one and a half of the three. So, yeah.
And he's... Billy Dee Williams has made some bloody awful movies since 1983.
He has, yeah. He has. I think it'd be interesting to see how he's played. And, there was a surprise, obviously, that the Benicio del Toro role wasn't Lando, or could have been Lando. And obviously, I think... they needed something for someone big, you know. They need star names in there. Benicio did a great job, but Benicio. I think Lando would be interesting for the third one. I think that would be a nice coda for the trilogy, because I think he is a fairly important character. He played a big role, and it feels kind of odd that he's not being referenced at all.
And
not wanting to get into sort of questions of politics, because we've got, you know, the new cast is a multiplicity of different backgrounds, of color or of genders,
diverse. Let's just say real.
Well, compared to Star Wars, I'm doing it's fairly diverse.
Yeah, all right.
I think in a sense, and I don't think this is anything to do with it. I think it would be nice to have Lando there as well, because he was a good character, and at the time I think for black actors he was playing a role which was a little more against the type that action films tended to have of people of color, and so he was quite an important part of Star Wars in that sense as well, or in film movements. Because I've never seen anyone quite like Lando, to be honest, in a film.
No.
He's a bit of a trickster, he's a bit of a con man, but they're not really massively...
But it comes along in 1979, doesn't it? In an era when the main black characters in a movie are either... are usually black exploitation, with the exception of Clint Eastwood movies.
Well, yeah, there's not a great amount of good roles.
And no, exactly. And if a black guy's playing a character like Lando, who's kind of, he's a bit of a lech, isn't he? And he's he's clearly, a criminal. He's going to be dead at the end of the movie.
And he's a very charming lech as well. I think that was what was good about him. I mean, he makes that one sort of slight move on Leia, but he only does it really well. He does it twice. He makes another comment, she changes. But they're done very politely. They're not done in a lechy way. They're very. He's a really good character, and maybe also because he's in the Solo film, played by Donald Glover, who I think is a great actor. He'll do a good job there. Maybe that will be sufficient. Maybe that means that he will have to be in the third one, because people will... That connection might mean that he's inevitably... and I think that would be great, because, I think he's a really good character. He's a character which is often forgotten, but he breaks archetypes, and I think he should be... I think that solid bit of writing and characterization should be in the third film, and to remember the strengths of the original ones. So I think without Leia being there, I think definitely Lando should have a strong role. I think that would be good, and maybe that would also tie some of the things with Chewie and Han in, because a lot of people complained with The Force Awakens that Chewie's loss was not really regarded very well, but it seemed to be, given that that was such a massive thing for Chewie, maybe having Lando there as well, as I know Chewie had a little bit with Luke there, that would sort of cement that loss, which should be a big thing. So Lando, I think Lando would be really good.
I'm optimistic. I'm looking forward to the next part. How can you not be optimistic? Well, there's only like six rebels left.
Which was brutal.
Yeah.
That was really brutal to watch a film where they were all getting wiped out. And by the end of it, I thought, by God, the only amount you've got left fits in a stock flight freighter.
Yeah, exactly. They're not even using the smuggling compartment.
No, well, might as well. There's probably only four left. But, there was that feeling that this was an absolute decimation. And I don't know. And part of me would like to see how that reflects on Poe in the next movie, whether he's recognized. And part of me feels like I'd like it to move on now. And, this is war. We make mistakes. Things,
Yeah, well, but, presumably we're going to get in, you know, when they meet up with the rebels at the Outer Rim. Because is he now like the senior?
Probably is, yeah.
He's in charge.
So in a sense for Poe, maybe it was a very good career move.
Maybe he's Jar Jar.
I mean, that's one person I would really not want in the film. I know there was some point there was talks of having a skull somewhere of his in The Force Awakens. And I don't think I even want that. I mean, I've got nothing massively against Jar Jar. I just think he was a bad move and just needs to be left where he was. I wouldn't mind seeing, like we've said before, you know, we've had Rebels, I think. It'd be nice to have General What's-Her-Name from that in the last film, just to tie that into canon. Because she's mentioned in Rogue One quite significantly, well, not significantly, but and the ship from Rebels is in there as well. I think given if these are meant to be part of the Disney canon, then they should be there too. Or, you know, even Ahsoka from Clone Wars would be quite an interesting cameo too. Not a big thing, because obviously, like you say, you know, for the casual viewer, they won't know who the hell these people are. But it might be quite nice to tie in a few of those parts of the canon.
Well, speaking of Clone Wars, that goes back to Snoke, doesn't it? Because if that was the real Snoke, he's been cut in half, like a certain other...
What? Oh, yeah, so he could come back with half a body. Yes.
Come back with half a body and some spider legs, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always liked the idea that Snoke was the... And his name's gone out of my head. Is the kid from Rebels would be really interesting. You know, the kid with the Force powers from Rebels ends up being Snoke. I thought that would be fun. But at the same time, like I said, I kind of like the idea that, you know, that films like this should be subverting the way that we our expectations. And to be honest, apart from the mystery box Abrams always uses and always misuses, where he creates a mystery which you can tell he has no idea what the answer is going to be. So he's got this empty box, which he calls his mystery box. He's as clueless to it as anyone else. Snoke, there was no real relevance to him particularly. He was too much like the Emperor. The only thing which galvanized him was this, who is he? Is he someone from Star Wars history? You know, if they had said in The Force Awakens, he's a kid who grew up on Tatooine or something, way from Luke Skywalker, nothing to do with, or Coruscant, nothing to do with anyone, people would have found him boring. It's only because he had a bit of a mystery to who he was that galvanized him. But if you take that away, he's just another emperor. So wipe him out, to me, is absolutely fine. Get rid of that. Although I agree with you, Christian, I wouldn't be surprised in the third film if there is another dark force which challenges Kylo. I think there needs... I wonder whether there needs to be something more than Rey to challenge Kylo, something which needs to... it could be Luke. I mean, there was that line that Luke has in this film, isn't it? You know, if you kill me, I'll be haunting you, essentially.
Yeah.
Maybe Luke will be Kylo's ghost. Maybe he'll be that sort of chip on Kylo's shoulder. That could be quite interesting, rather than Rey. Have him and Kylo have scenes. And see how that plays out and how that affects this very confused, angry character. One final thing I will say I like about Kylo is that he justifies why he's going down the path. Like in Revenge of the Sith, where Anakin almost... It's almost like he's infected by the Force. He does the dark side. His reasoning is, you know, I've had a few dreams that Padme dies. Palpatine says, well, I might be able to help you bring her back to life if she does die, but we've got no evidence she's going to die. And then he goes and kills children. It doesn't really flow. While this, you've got Kylo saying, you know, family causes me pain. I don't want pain. I want to be free of everyone. And to be free of everyone, I've got to be in control. Join me. And that, to me, is a very powerful way of saying how seductive the dark side is. It's not an infection. It can be a desire to find peace through power. And I think that was a quite interesting way to bring him. So I think this did a lot for Kylo, this film, as well. For making him just this angry wannabe Neo Darth Vader, he became someone who you could see why he is now and why he's forcing himself down a road that he's not 100% sure that he really wants to go down, but it's the only road he feels comfortable with.
Okay, so that is... The Last Jedi, and we're going to be talking about it again later. I've now got images of Kylo Ren's garage in which he has loads of Darth Vader memorabilia, like a TIE fighter on a sort of on a sort of a special pivot that spins out of control. But no, you tell us what you think. How much did you enjoy The Last Jedi? Did you spot any of the cameos in The Last Jedi? Because there are a lot of them beyond Mark Hamill's secondary character. And quite a princely pair in there, I'm told. And you obviously don't spot them because they're in costume or they're CGI. But, you know, did you spot them at the time? And, yeah, just let us know what you think and where you think the third movie is going and what you think of Snoke's death, the Luke death, the Holdo manoeuvre, as it will forever be known. yeah, let us know. Until next time, we'll be back soon. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.